This holiday season, 12 strangers, 12 tales.
Something was out there.
Whatever it is, it's ravenous.
Was that the last person to see you alive?
12 Ghosts, starring Malcolm McDowell.
Who are you?
I'm the innkeeper.
Presented in immersive 3D audio. A co-production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild from Aaron Mankey. Listen to 12 Ghosts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And reality TV stars know this better than anyone. But what you may not know about them, or even believe, is actually criminal behavior.
I'm Kaylin Miller Keyes, and on my new podcast, True Crime Reality, I will be joined by reality TV stars as they dive deep into the details of a crime they have a direct connection to.
Listen to True Crime Reality on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where were you in 92? Bouncing your butt to Sir Mix-a-Lot? Wondering if you, like Billy Ray Cyrus, could pull off a mullet? Now iHeart has a podcast all about it. I'm Jason Lanfear, and on my new show, Where Were You in 92, we take a ride through the major hits, one-hit wonders, and shocking scandals that shaped the wildest 12 months in music history.
You know, the president came after me. Everybody, Time Warner, was madness.
Music was magic, and I had completely burned that to the ground.
I realized I'm the forbidden fruit.
So listen and follow Where Were You in 92 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The ranch in July 2022 is a very different place to the one I visited in March of 2021. For one thing, it's not so cold that my water bottle freezes every night. But more notably, there's less tension in the air, and no one's wearing a plate carrier. Not everyone who was there for the siege stayed. Some of them had only been visiting, or they'd found other places to live since then. But Penny, Kat, Jen, and Jay have been constants on the ranch since 2020. Something I've struggled with so far is giving a sense of just what a welcoming and friendly place the Tenacious Unicorn Ranch is. It's a thing I haven't really stopped thinking about since I first visited, and a thing that a lot of folks have been looking for a very long time. Even in the worst times of the siege, when Penny and Jay barely slept, when Aldo was out running off church with guns, or when Paul and I were sat up all night absolutely destroying the Costco snack melange that Penny had prepared for us, people always seemed to be laughing. When we sat down to talk about the siege, we started off by laughing. It's a difficult topic and it was a scary time, but I guess it's easier to laugh about it a year later when you know everyone's okay.
Well, let's go over everyone's legal names, date of birth, social security number, maybe your four-digit... What?
Firearms owned, legally or otherwise.
Yeah, list of fears, that sort of thing.
Any kinks?
Lots.
We'll run past 45 minutes.
A short list of kinks I don't have. But.
We don't want this to be just a story about the worst week the ranch ever had. We want it to be a story about a community that overcame adversity and is thriving. That community extends way beyond the dome, which the unicorns call home, and even beyond the valley that they live in. But we should start with that valley. Because even at the peak of the siege, it seems like most people were on the unicorn's side. Or at least, they just wanted to leave them alone. It was because of warnings from other people in the valley that they knew to patrol their perimeter at night. Had they not been there, this might be a very different story. A year later, everyone in the valley values the unicorns being there. During the few days we spent there this summer, we visited neighbors for drinks. We went into town for donuts and coffee, and dropped in on Jordan, the Tribune publisher, at his ranch. It's not as if the unicorns are pariahs sitting up in their house surrounded by guns and afraid of what's coming next. They're active members of the community, and they're very welcome. There was a time when this community wasn't as friendly to queer people. But they've always been here. I spoke to Penny about this last year, while we drove to the recycling center in the next county to recycle Westcliff cans.
Yeah, like we're doing the same thing y'all are doing. Like, you right. Did not pick up on that? Like,
yeah, not to mention also that, like, there are queers here.
Like, yeah, we're not know the first a wave. Lot. Like, yeah. It's like, we're not breaking any fucking mold. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're definitely loud. We're not, we didn't, like, get kowtowed and fucking, like, bent over and, like, told to shut up our whole life, so we're definitely like, fuck you, we're queer. And they don't like that. Like, yeah, I get that makes old good old boys uncomfortable, and I get it. Also, fuck you. Like,
yeah, no, we're going to be who we are, living the way we want to.
Look, if you can hang two Trump flags and a Confederate flag from the back of your truck and drive down Main Street screaming fucking horrible, hateful things and feel perfectly justified in doing that, I'm going to just be queer. Like, I'm going to go ahead and be as loud as I want to be. Like, obviously you think it's okay to have personal expression.
Yeah.
Like,
no, that's really, freedom of speech right there.
Right? You really, really think it's okay. So I'm going to go ahead and take you up on that. Like,
yeah, it's weird. They have this, like, I don't know, like, if it was some kind of, like, don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, well, that's what they keep saying to us, right? It's like, well, you don't have to be in our face about it. I'm like, motherfucker, I'm just living. Like, I'm not, like, you know, I'm not coming into your home and humping your couch. Like, I'm just being alive. Like,
it can be easy, especially if you only connect with rural places through the media, to see cities as queer spaces and the countryside as unfriendly to queer people. While politics in rural America can be pretty bad, it's never really been true that queer people don't belong there. The Unicorns pointed this out.
Historically, if you know anything about history, like, country spaces are queer fucking spaces. Like, we're the ones out here doing the actual work while fucking old fucking cis white men just collect money from doing shitty ranching that damages animals, damages the earth, and fucking does not build community or help anybody but themselves. Queer integration into country spaces is so fucking important because we bring heart and empathy and all these things that capitalism has stripped out of these areas. We bring that back, and we've always fucking been here. Like, fuck off. Like,
real cowboys were constantly fucking.
Constantly. They fucked.
A lot.
Each other.
And they were mostly, like, black and brown people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wasn't white. The West was not white. And by the way, like, we have said this before, and we'll say it again, nature is inherently queer, and we fucking belong here.
Yes.
Like, we fucking belong wherever the fuck we go. Like, that is a queer space. There is no, like, hard line that country spaces are for cis people. Fuck that. Like, we belong here. We've always been here, and we're really good at it.
After the siege and its coverage, everyone knows that the Unicorns are low-tier queer icons. But they're only part of the local queer community, and they have other folks over for game nights once a week. They told us one story about Pride Month in Westcliff this year, and thankfully it didn't involve the ATF.
There was a really adorable, during Pride Month, we went to Family Dollar, which is like one of the few stores in town. And I guess we were talking to the manager who was checking us out. And he mentioned, like, oh, yeah, like, I have a gay and a trans working here. Like, I love y'all, you know. And it was a little embarrassing, but the heart was there.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And
I was like, it was very
you just outed two of your employees.
Yeah,
like, I mean, you didn't say who, but it was. Yeah. But the point is, like even Family Dollar in middle of nowhere, true. Westcliff has two queer employees. Like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
we're really everywhere.
Queer people had always been in the Valley, but it had become harder to share who they were with their neighbors in recent decades. They never stopped existing, but they stopped being safe.
Yeah, I mean,
we're connecting with a lot of queer people that have lived here for a long time.
Like, yeah, it's the fact that a community is so hostile that their queer community has to be closeted does not mean that the queer community isn't here. It just means that a lot of assholes are here.
Don't ask, don't tell, an institutional version of closeting, is something that Penny is very familiar with. She was in the Army as a cavalry scout while the policy was still in place. If you're not familiar, don't ask, don't tell was a military policy that was in place from 1994 until 2011. Under the policy, anyone who wasn't straight was to remain in the closet, and in theory, they were protected from discrimination. But if they came out as gay or bi or trans or otherwise queer, they could be discharged. Queer people were not even allowed to talk about anything related to their queerness because doing so, quote, would create an unacceptable risk to the high standards of morale, good order and discipline, and unit cohesion that are the essence of military capability.
Don't ask, don't tell with a fucked up policy. Like, I had a boyfriend and a girlfriend when I was in the military. And I definitely was like, this is my best friendo in Germany. And he comes over and sometimes spends the night because we're best friendos. I don't know. It was really, really damaging. It was just really, really damaging to like 100% not be able to be yourself. But then also like be able to leave post and have a secret life where you were yourself, you know, like. And then when you go out with the guys, like there's always those weird moments where you like do run into other gay locals that you have like known and like you've had deep conversations with in other contexts, and just have to be like, no, like don't talk to me, like we don't know each other, which is I'm sure damaging for them, you know, like yeah. That can't be fucking normal, like I don't know, it's weird. And then on the throw on top of that, that you're also a girl, like, you know what I mean? Like, so you're pretending to be a gay man who's straight sometimes around certain people, but really you're a gay, you're a bisexual woman, pre-surgery and with the wrong hormones. And so it just ends up being a soup of just, like, compartmentalization to the point where you just like forget people, and then they show back up and you're like, oh yeah, like you're from this quadrant of my life, like I don't know, it's not healthy.
Yeah,
it doesn't do good things.
Don't Ask, Don't Tell had pretty devastating consequences for the mental health of thousands of service people. The National Transgender Discrimination Survey found that 20% of trans people have served in the military, over twice the rate of cisgender people. But until very recently, they weren't even allowed to do so openly. Not being able to be yourself with people that you're expected to risk your life for isn't really conducive to good morale or indeed, quote, the unit cohesion that is the essence of military capability. There's no doubt that being familiar with guns, something they gained from military experience, did help the unicorns. But it's not the only thing that helped them. Sometimes, especially on Twitter, where things seem to get reduced to simple terms to fit into the discourse of the day, the Tenacious Unicorn Ranch story has been reduced to a story about guns. Undoubtedly, guns are a part of the story, but they would have been useless without community and solidarity. That is something that the unicorns at the ranch have taken to heart. A year later, they're doing mutual aid work with the Lakota people on the Pine Ridge Reservation, driving truckloads of donations to them every few months, and using their internet presence to get donations. If we want to look at this story as an example of anarchism in action, then it's important to remember that if we want a world where the state is not the only entity with the ability to do violence, then we should also want a world where it's not the only entity responsible for caring for people with unmet material needs. Alongside ranch work, Penny and Jay also make ends meet by working construction jobs on local buildings. Something that George from the Sentinel is very proud of, and that other local residents are beginning to regret, is that Custer County doesn't have a building code. Here's a snippet of his conversation with TL about that.
And one example, TL, is that this county is so free, we don't even have building codes. If you want to live here, you can build yourself a shack with twigs and live in it.
You know, that's the way it is here in my little burg in Texas, too.
Yeah, so...
Do you really need them? Do you really need them? I mean, that's something I think should be attacked in other ways, but go ahead. But that's one of the things that make Custer County and one of the reasons I moved to this one.
Yeah. I mean, building codes basically caused housing prices to become unreachable for the middle class.
The problem with this conservative utopian vision is that it has resulted in a lot of residents getting ripped off by less than upstanding builders and now left with their homes falling apart. That's where Penny and Jay can step in and make a decent side income, drywalling and finishing buildings that, while often are not very old, are already crumbling.
Like we've always said, this community is 99% awesome. And that has held true. We do contracting work because there are no building codes in Custer County, as opposed to what like the libertarian ideal of no building codes is. It actually just means that there's a bunch of shoddy houses that need repaired constantly. And we have construction skills. So we're in people's homes, repairing them and doing work for the actual people of the county daily. We frequent businesses up here because we're all about local support. We build community gleefully. We build community. Like, we really enjoy it up here.
I'm Mangesh Achikadur, and to be honest, I don't believe in astrology. But from the moment I was born, it's been a part of my life.
In India, it's like smoking. You might not smoke, but you're going to get secondhand astrology.
And lately, I've been wondering if the universe has been trying to tell me to stop running and pay attention. Because maybe there is magic in the stars, if you're willing to look for it. So I rounded up some friends and we dove in, and let me tell you, it got weird fast. Tantric curses, Major League Baseball teams, canceled marriages, K-pop. But just when I thought I had a handle on this sweet and curious show about astrology, my whole world came crashing down.
Situation doesn't look good. There is risk to father.
And my whole view on astrology, it changed. Whether you're a skeptic or a believer, I think your ideas are going to change too. Listen to Skyline Drive starting November 29th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where were you in 92? Were you bouncing your butt to Sir Mix-a-Lot, wondering if you, like Billy Ray Cyrus, could pull off a mullet? Yes, 1992 was a crazy year for music and a crazy time to be alive. And now iHeart has a podcast all about it. I'm Jason Lanfier, and on my new show, Where Were You in 92, we take a ride through the major hits, one-hit wonders, and irresistible scandals that shape what might be the wildest, most controversial 12 months in music and pop culture history.
They were angry at me. They thought I was uncontrollable and wild. I wanted to burst open.
So the president came after me. Everybody, Time Warner, was madness.
Can you imagine trying to put a record like that out right now? We canceled before it made it to the post office.
Featuring interviews and special guests like Sir Mix-a-Lot, Ice-T, Tori Amos, and Vanessa Williams, this podcast poses the question, what was it about 1992 that made it so groundbreaking and so absolutely fabulous? So buckle up and tune into Where Were You in 92. New episodes drop every Wednesday. Listen and follow on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
My father was a rock star.
It was like Beatlemania.
But not here in America. Living behind the Iron Curtain, Dean Reed criticized the American government and preached peace. But it all came at a cost.
There were bomb threats and death threats.
Everywhere he went.
He comes into the view of the Stasi.
He is arrested by the secret police.
The CIA is worrying about it.
Without a doubt.
He had millions of adoring fans.
Dean Reed, für Eichsee.
And also lots of enemies.
You communist pinko.
As the Soviet Union was starting to crumble, he made a big announcement.
I'm an American.
He wanted to come back home. And then the unthinkable happened.
Dean Reed died.
There were so many questions and so few answers.
He had been assassinated.
He committed suicide.
Come with me, Ramona Reed, to learn more about the extraordinary life and mysterious death of a revolutionary.
Listen to Red Elvis, a Curiosity Audio Network podcast, starting December 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The community now is a little smaller than when James first visited. Currently, five people live at the ranch full-time, but they still have a couple of trailers open to trans folks in need of a safe place to stay, or, you know, visiting journalists. Looking for a safe place to stay is how Jay first came to the ranch. Like a lot of us, she had a difficult time at the start of the pandemic. The world was changing, and it seemed, in May of 2020, that America was as well. For a lot of people with less progressive parents, the BLM uprising presented a difficult choice between family and community. Jay was one of those people that had to face that choice.
So basically, I was living in Dallas, working retail, living in my car when the pandemic started. And so I was furloughed. Luckily, Texas is actually surprisingly good about unemployment. So I, you know, had that. My parents are retired from the military around there. And when the BLM uprisings happened, I did some things. And basically my parents were like, you either can stay here and not be associated with Antifa, or, you know, you can't stay here if you're associated with Antifa. And so I was like, okay, I guess I'm leaving then, which is fine. There was a lot of tension there anyways. Wasn't good for me. So, because of the unemployment, I was like, okay, for once have some resources. I can just kind of, I'm already living in my car. I can just kind of travel around for a bit. Why not? And, I think I just posted on Twitter, like, trans commune win, as probably most queer people have. And, one of my permaculture mutuals actually was like, hey, have you heard of this place? It's not far from you. And posted a link to, I think it was the Vice article.
Yeah.
And, I sent a message with a bunch of questions about it and making sure it wasn't, trans medicalists or anything like that.
Which is always like what you want to see when somebody contacts the ranch, like about coming up. I way prefer an in-depth breakdown and a lot of questions to, I'll just show up and figure it out.
In case you're not familiar with what a trans medicalist is, we'll let Paul ask that question for you. And we're going to play this not to make Paul look bad. We're playing it for you because I think it's important to see what kind of space the ranch is. It's not one where you can't get things wrong. It's one where you can ask if you don't know something. And because everyone there had shown that they're willing to risk life and limb for one another, they assume that you're asking it because you care about them and you want to know how to say things in a way that won't hurt anyone.
What the fuck is a trans medicalist?
Someone who thinks that, so primarily,
does not describe any of us, but a trans medicalist is someone who first and foremost thinks that all trans people should be on hormones. All trans people should have surgery. All trans people should strive towards,
You're not trans.
And they don't believe in, and they don't believe in anything but the gender binary
so,
as well.
So like basically if you don't want to transition directly from like a male to a female or directly
or
from
whatever,
a female to a male, like you're not,
you're not a real trans person.
Yep.
Not real.
They think those trans people are making it worse for other trans people.
Sorry, you're not allowed to be non-binary.
That was my next question. So like, are non-binary?
Yeah,
people,
they hate those people. They think they're faking.
So, but like, do they say they're not trans and
yes.
lump them into a different group?
Yeah, no, they often call them trans trenders because it's like a popularity contest.
Okay.
They think.
Okay.
So yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
And those people suck.
Jay has found a home at the ranch now, and just like everyone else there, she's a part of the family which takes care of one another.
It was actually really funny because Jay showed up, and the assumption I thought was that just going to stay for a little bit, and then you just didn't leave, and it was great.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't a problem. It was like, oh, is Jay staying? That's good.
It was very natural.
It works out. Yeah. This is exactly what, a lot of queer people talk about online, which is...
Yeah. Well, and Jay brought a passion that we hadn't seen with a lot of people that had come up. A lot of people had come up with this like, yeah, we'll just see what it is or whatever. But Jay came up with like knowledge about theory and like had studied and was really like conscientiously a part of this project, which was huge. I mean, for me, like
part of what Jay has been able to help with is organizing the moving of animals to different pastures. James was at the ranch last year when they were replacing their old fence and planning out their fields.
We'll tear down this ratty ass fence and this back fence here as we build the new kind of structure for the girls out in that field when we're doing the fence heightening. Okay. So it's not only security increase, but we'll fence off the driveway, and then the babies and mamas will actually get access all the way down the driveway and up this hill a little bit.
Nice.
Hey, babies, come on. We'll just structure our fields a little bit better. And then the girls will have two pastures
which is kind of huge.
We can rotate them into.
Nice. Yeah, and then we can start actual permaculture. Yeah. Or is it permaculture?
It's in this context, it's like regenerative agriculture.
Thank you. That's what I was looking for.
You know, you can also like permaculture people do it too, you know.
So. Yeah, but what we're doing is
it's both, really. We'll be doing both.
Okay, yeah.
So you can use either.
Jay's our expert, so.
Okay. There's like, definitely an industry like, regenerative agriculture is the new thing, but it's still capitalism and it's still exploitative. But there are also people doing real regenerative agriculture.
Yeah.
Talking with Jay, it's very evident just how passionate they are about these topics and how things like biodiversity and regenerative and permaculture processes tie into many aspects of the ranch itself.
The, you know, capitalist project is homogenization and simplification. The entire goal is things like monocrops. The entire goal is, you know, the gender binary and controlling the reproduction of labor. Controlling cis women and queer gender expression is a big part of that. Like, you can't have those things and have a capitalist white supremacist environment where you can extract from the earth and from labor. That is such a key component of this whole, like, you know, Western project or whatever you want to call it. And nature doesn't care. Nature is queer. Nature just exists. Fungi have thousands of sexes and genders.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
In fact, that's mandatory.
In fact, like, the part of the point of nature is biodiversity, because that is the most effective method for actually iterating and testing what works.
And surviving. Yeah.
And we're bimodal, by the way, not binary. Like, and, you know, if you need to look that up, you can go ahead and do that.
Yeah. Pause.
And permaculture in particular, you know, one big problem with permaculture is there's a lot of white people who use the practices and don't acknowledge that it all comes from indigenous cultures. It all comes from indigenous lifeways. And they make a lot of money by not saying that, so that's important to address. Permaculture has its, you know, value, but if you're not learning from indigenous people and giving back to indigenous people, you're doing it wrong.
I'm Mangesh Atikadur, and to be honest, I don't believe in astrology. But from the moment I was born, it's been a part of my life.
In India, it's like smoking. You might not smoke, but you're going to get secondhand astrology.
And lately, I've been wondering if the universe has been trying to tell me to stop running and pay attention. Because maybe there is magic in the stars, if you're willing to look for it. So I rounded up some friends and we dove in, and let me tell you, it got weird fast. Tantric curses, Major League Baseball teams, canceled marriages, K-pop. But just when I thought I had a handle on this sweet and curious show about astrology, my whole world came crashing down.
Situation doesn't look good. There is risk to father.
And my whole view on astrology, it changed. Whether you're a skeptic or a believer, I think your ideas are going to change too. Listen to Skyline Drive starting November 29th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where were you in 92? Were you bouncing your butt to Sir Mix-a-Lot, wondering if you, like Billy Ray Cyrus, could pull off a mullet? Yes, 1992 was a crazy year for music and a crazy time to be alive. And now iHeart has a podcast all about it. I'm Jason Lanfier, and on my new show, Where Were You in 92, we take a ride through the major hits, one-hit wonders, and irresistible scandals that shape what might be the wildest, most controversial 12 months in music and pop culture history.
They were angry at me. They thought I was uncontrollable and wild. I wanted to burst open.
Well, the president came after me. Everybody, Time Warner, was madness.
Can you imagine trying to put a record like that out right now? We'd be canceled before it made it to the post office.
Featuring interviews and special guests like Sir Mix-a-Lot, Ice-T, Tori Amos, and Vanessa Williams, this podcast poses the question, what was it about 1992 that made it so groundbreaking and so absolutely fabulous? So buckle up and tune into Where Were You in 92. New episodes drop every Wednesday. Listen and follow on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
My father was a rock star.
It was like Beatlemania.
But not here in America. Living behind the Iron Curtain, Dean Reed criticized the American government and preached peace. But it all came at a cost.
There were bomb threats and death threats.
Everywhere he went.
He comes into the view of the Stasi.
He is arrested by the secret police.
The CIA is worrying about it.
Without a doubt.
He had millions of adoring fans.
Dean Reed, here I see.
And also lots of enemies.
You communist pinko.
As the Soviet Union was starting to crumble, he made a big announcement.
I'm an American.
He wanted to come back home. And then the unthinkable happened.
Dean Reed died.
There were so many questions and so few answers.
He had been assassinated.
He committed suicide.
Come with me, Ramona Reed, to learn more about the extraordinary life and mysterious death of a revolutionary.
Listen to Red Elvis, a Curiosity Audio Network podcast, starting December 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just because the immediate threat of armed men breaking into the ranch has gone away, doesn't mean that they still don't have to be careful. In April of 2021, after the siege was over, the then-sheriff Shannon Byerly claimed that one of his deputies went to the ranch to ask questions about a road traffic accident that one of the ranchers had been involved in. He claimed the deputy was met by armed and uncooperative ranchers who barred the deputy from entering. Body cam video obtained by Reuters, thanks to a Public Records Act request, shows nothing of the sorts. The deputy met a single person, not visibly armed, who was polite and courteous. In subsequent interviews, Byerly acknowledged that he had been mistaken in his account. But we'll let you hear Jay's account of the events that day.
So my Chevy Blazer had been sitting over the winter. It had a bad alternator, and I finally, we finally got, you know, the money together to fix, to replace the alternator. Looked it over. Everything seemed fine. And I was going back to Texas to grab some stuff and bring it back. And went around a apparently black ice corner, and I'm pretty sure what happened was my tire popped around. I was only going like 35, 40 because, you know, black, there's ice. It's still
early in the morning.
Yeah. It was like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And I'm pretty sure what happened was my tire popped, and then my Blazer proceeded to tumble, you know,
flip rollover.
Yeah. Into the, luckily not a ditch or anything, just on the south left side of the road. And so I called Penny and got picked up.
Yeah, we take care of our own. We're not going to call the cops. It was, it only was you. No reason.
And then I was like, okay, let me look at towing around the area. Let me see. And the local towing company, which is just like a small family owned
one guy
thing, yeah. One guy basically. They on their Facebook like business page, they said they opened at like 9 or 10 or something like that. So I was like, waiting. Okay, so it's going to be on the side of the road until then. That's fine. I'll call and I'm going to go to sleep until then. Cause I was just in a rollover accident.
You were probably concussed. Like, yeah,
probably whiplashed at least. Yeah,
totally.
And then, so I was in my trailer and I suddenly in my PJs and suddenly get a call from dispatch. And they're like, there's a deputy at your gate. You know, can you go blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, I took a vehicle down.
In your PJs?
In my PJs.
Unarmed.
I didn't have a pistol in the car or on me. And I basically just, you know, as you do with cops, as any sane human does, I answer to the extent that you're legally required to be polite, but also like, I'm not going to invite you on. I'm not going to be your friend.
You don't need to be,
you're
here.
Not my friend.
Yeah. But you weren't standoffish.
Questions. And he did the usual, like, you know, were you drinking? And I was like, it's like 5 o'clock in the morning. It's like 6 o'clock right now. I was going back. I was driving back to Texas to pick up stuff.
I was starting a road trip. That's not when you like get blitzed. Like,
I don't know.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And so he gave me his card and left. And I was like, okay, that's, you know, that's fine. That was weird. But, and it was weird to me too, that like they apparently have some kind of relationship with this towing guy.
Yeah.
Where, because they didn't even ask me, like, hey, do you want it towed to this place?
Yeah.
They just towed it before they even contacted me. And so either you bring the title over to sign it over to the towing person, or you pay him like $400 or $500
to tow it out here,
to bring it back here.
So that's what actually happened. But then, for some reason, the local sheriff started telling a very different account of what took place outside the unicorn's driveway.
So, that was the start of
that was the actual incident. Yeah. Then, Byerly, the sheriff, started getting interviewed. And in those interviews, he would say, there were six of them. They met us at the gate armed, were extremely hostile to the point where my sheriff
felt in or fear
my
of
deputy
his life.
Felt fear for his life and had to retreat back.
He might have felt fear for his life.
But he also said, we don't go there anymore.
That's scary.
But he said on record, we don't go there anymore because it's too scary.
Oh my God.
And so that is setting us up to be killed. That is setting us up to be murked by
police.
It's like,
you know, this is, Kiwi Farm says this all the time.
Yeah.
This is Tranny Waco.
Yeah. And that is the setup for it, to become that. And so, because then now all of his deputies are just ready to shoot us on sight because we're dangerous.
A reporter from Reuters was looking into the incident and heard the conflicting stories from the sheriff and the unicorns, but she thought of an easy fix to definitively know what happened.
She just FOIA'd the body cam footage, which proved unequivocally that they were lying their fucking ass off and we were telling the truth. And Byerly retired this year. I don't know if...
Well, and when she FOIA'd it, she went back.
Oh, God, yeah. And Byerly was like, can I remove my comments from
because
the record?
Because she asked. She like, I don't know if it was a follow-up
interview.
Well,
she said, do you have any additional comments? And his additional comments were, can you please remove my previous statements from the record?
I think she said no.
And she emphatically said no and then published it internationally.
This wasn't the first suspect incident regarding the local sheriffs. When Paul was at the ranch in the immediate aftermath of the original siege, he witnessed cops hanging out with a group of people who were actively harassing the ranch.
I was here for a week, and at one point there was like 15 to 20 cars at Chud Ranch, which it's up to you to release that location.
Right. We just call it Chud Ranch. Yep.
But it's
the ranch of Chud.
You can see it from the ranch.
You can see it from here. And there were two sheriff's deputies sitting at the curb the entire time as those cars pulled in there.
Yep.
And they were protecting our harassers.
Yeah, well, they were sitting there side by side talking to each other while the cars pulled in there.
You probably have said this before, and I just didn't remember.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been 20 of them.
So the other end of that is then when it got publicized, the sheriff then said, oh, we don't know anything about it. Like, they didn't contact us. We didn't.
Yeah, they said they couldn't verify the statements made in the media about threats against the ranch.
Exactly. Well, these were just hanging out at the fascist.
Well, and they were super snooty about it. They made it sound like, well, the Tenacious Unicorn Ranch clearly doesn't want to be part of our community. So why would we help them? That seemed to be the implication.
Sheriff Byerly, who spoke at a 2015 Oath Keepers rally, has since resigned as sheriff. But for understandable reasons, the unicorns still don't dial 911 when they feel in danger. Instead, they reach out to Paul, to Aldo, and a network of community members who help with their security both online and on the ground. They also routinely train with firearms, and have added a much more serious fence to the property than the one that the intruders climbed over in 2021. Right after James and I's most recent visit this past summer, Kiwi Farms started being in the news a lot more due to a campaign attempting to take it down, but as the hate forum entered the discourse again, the unicorns had started noticing cars driving past the ranch repeatedly, something that Paul, Aldo, and James observed during the siege. And now, in just the past few weeks, trans people have been killed in a nightclub just an hour away from their house, just a few miles away from the bar where we met them this past summer to celebrate Jay's birthday. Tomorrow, we'll talk about what those threats mean for the ranch and where they are now.
Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.
This holiday season, 12 strangers, 12 tales.
Something was out there.
Whatever it is, it's ravenous.
Was that the last person to see you alive?
12 Ghosts, starring Malcolm McDowell.
Who are you?
I'm the innkeeper.
Presented in immersive 3D audio. A co-production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild from Aaron Mankey. Listen to 12 Ghosts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And reality TV stars know this better than anyone. But what you may not know about them, or even believe, is actually criminal behavior.
I'm Kaylin Miller Keyes, and on my new podcast, True Crime Reality, I will be joined by reality TV stars as they dive deep into the details of a crime they have a direct connection to.
Listen to True Crime Reality on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where were you in 92? Bouncing your butt to Sir Mix-a-Lot? Wondering if you, like Billy Ray Cyrus, could pull off a mullet? Now iHeart has a podcast all about it. I'm Jason Lanfier, and on my new show, Where Were You in 92, we take a ride through the major hits, one-hit wonders, and shocking scandals that shaped the wildest 12 months in music history.
You know, the president came after me, everybody, Time Warner, with madness.
Music was magic, and I had completely burned that to the ground.
I realized I'm the forbidden fruit.
So listen and follow Where Were You in 92 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.